Are you guys ready for the Monday Night Raw review? We've got a lot to cover with the Becky Lynch versus Bianca match for the Raw Women's Championship, the new music of RK-Bro, Kevin Owens references his remaining 3 months in WWE, and there's still no mention of Survivor Series at all. We're going to go over this and everything else right now.
This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore!
Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the Monday Night Raw review for this November 2nd, 2021 Election Day. 2021, a little bit calmer of an election day than last year, unless you live in Virginia, that is, or you have a vested interest in the Virginia gubernatorial race, and we'll do it all over again next year with Senate races and, of course, 2024, people are already talking about. So, that said, didn't expect to open the show talking about election day, but that was somehow the first thing on my mind. But turning the page to wrestling, I want to let you guys know, if you didn't already, that the Casual Wrestling Fan will be answering emails. Mr. and Mrs. Casual Wrestling Fan are going to be answering emails on the email portion of the mailbag tomorrow night. So that means everybody that wants to get in on that and have Mr. Casual Wrestling Fan and Mrs. Casual Wrestling Fan answer your questions or comments or rants, do that via email. You can send them to me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Or, of course, if you're on Patreon, you just send me a message there and you will you'll get into that mix. But I'll be doing the voicemail portion. Now, whether or not the emails come first or the voicemails come first, haven't really decided. I know previously I mentioned that the voicemails will come first, but it depends on when the file from Mr. Casual Wrestling Fan comes to me and when I'm able to produce it and so forth. So, you know, perhaps it will be the normal format, but it may not be. That said, I will still be doing the voicemails. He'll be taking, and his wife and himself will be taking the email portion. So get in your emails to us by, I would say, noon Eastern time tomorrow, so I can forward them on to him by early afternoon. So, all right, everybody, let's talk Monday Night Raw, and let's talk about Damian Priest. I actually want to start with Damian Priest. When is the last time, if ever? I don't think there was a last time. This is the first time ever that I've opened my show talking about Damian Priest, of all people. But to me, he was a standout in Monday Night Raw this week, with a match against effing T-Bar. T-Bar. That is how much this this segment impacted me. And the title of the show, in part, is saying that Damian Priest has been reborn. I believe that. Whatever they decided to do with him here, with the eye makeup and the hairstyle differently and the facials and the eyes, boy, the eyes are doing it for me. They have, like, reinvented this guy without even having him say a word. It's absolutely amazing. I don't know who came up with this or how it was birthed. I don't care. Right now, I like what I see. And yes, we don't have a big sample size to pull from. We don't know how his promos are going to go or really what the catalyst was that started this whole thing. Right now, I don't care, because what I'm seeing from Damian is just aggressiveness that suits him much better than kind of this cool, laid back Latin guy that hangs out with movie stars or hangs out with music stars, rather. And the days of Bad Bunny and him are long gone. And it's just, it feels like Damian Priest is a big time player in a matter of a couple of weeks. And last week he did the same thing to T-Bar. This week the follow through was continue on that. It was let's continue to move forward and see how the crowd reacts. Now, I guess this was supposed to be a heel turn, but against T-Bar, how can it really be a heel turn? Anybody versus T-Bar is going to be the babyface. T-Bar is generic wrestler X. Big guy, he's what, 6'7", has ties to one of the worst storylines in the history of professional wrestling in Retribution. One of these days, I'm just going to do like a thesis on how terrible that was and break it down even further. But he has ties to that group. He wears face paint that doesn't make sense, and it's just to make him not so generic, but there's no reason for the face paint other than you got to make yourself marketable, pal. And there's just no logic to it, just doing it to do it. We know nothing about him other than he likes to make create pain or, I don't know, whatever generic promo he said. It was just, he is as bland as it gets. And that's not to say that he eventually won't become something. He's got the size. He's got a decent look. He's a good looking dude. But right now he is as plain as vanilla. And it's, to me, not a heel turn if you take out T-Bar. And I think the crowd in attendance would agree. I didn't really hear a ton of boos for Damian Priest. I think people in general loved what they saw from the guy. Just all of a sudden something snapped. He's this psychopathic maniac that it seems like he can't be stopped right now. And he had a really good match with T-Bar. So as much as I just really kind of put down his character, T-Bar's that is, for being so generic. And by the way, name T-Bar means, I'm not a fan of the name T-Bar. What, does somebody know what the letter T stands for? I'm not sure. But to me, in the ring, he's good. And Damian Priest is really good in the ring. So I think we got a standout match, a match that when I saw it on Hulu, it made the Hulu cut. That told me something. Because last week, what T-Bar and Damian Priest did not make the Hulu cut. I had to go back and see what happened. But when it's on and made Hulu, that's how you know WWE is focusing on something. It's a window into what their priorities are, whatever makes the Hulu cut. And this did. And it was well-deserved. So I'm just really enjoying what I'm seeing out of T-Bar, or rather, Damian Priest. And you know what? In-ring T-Bar, I like what I saw too, from that respect. Character-wise, again, there's nothing there yet. But with Damian Priest, man, the aggressiveness, the kendo stick shots, those are so brutal. I don't know what it is, the fascination with the kendo stick and the WWE. For whatever reason, they love them some kendo sticks. I don't know if Tommy Dreamer got in somebody's ear and started just telling, you know, management how great kendo sticks are. I don't know. But for whatever reason, the last few years, WWE has been obsessed with them, maybe because they can't do chair shots to the head anymore, and this is kind of their make good. I don't know, but to be honest, kendo sticks are in some ways more dangerous because they splinter. They oftentimes break the skin. That creates lesions and welts, which can eventually break the skin. And if you're worried about infections, well, it's open season for infections. So in some ways, the kendo stick is not safer. Now, it may be safer from causing a concussion, but the kendo stick presents other risks that chairs do not and other blunt objects do not. So I'm not a kendo stick fan, actually. I think it's overused. And yes, it sounds good and it's easy to use. And, you know, I'm not a fan of it because it's so overdone. And I think it's oversold a lot of the time, too. But anyway, great match between these two and great character development. They have me interested in Damian Priest sincerely for the first time. And now we've got Apollo Crews seemingly being his next challenge. And with him coming out, to me, that would also indicate this is not a heel turn for Damian Priest, but rather an evolution of his babyface character. I hope we eventually get an explanation as to what triggered this in Damian. Did we get one? I don't think so. But we got at least Apollo back in the conversation, at least if it's not for the IC title, which obviously is not on Raw. It's for the United States. It's the parallel title that is on Raw. And I think they'll have a nice program together. And we'll see what a Commander Aziz can maybe do in the ring. Besides look menacing with his little pouty face and his silver Q-tip. You know, I want to see what he can actually do inside the ring. And it feels like they've been on the sidelines since WrestleMania. Since Big E took the Intercontinental Championship. It seems like they were forgotten. And I really loved what Apollo did before WrestleMania. And then he just went nowhere. Nowhere. And I was really sad about that. But they've interjected him back into the conversation. And well-deserved. I'm looking forward to this program. I really, truly am. So how about that for some positivity to open the show? And to talk about something different to open the show? Man, what's gotten into me? Well, let's continue to ride that wave. As we're going to talk about now the match that opened the show. Becky Lynch versus Bianca Belair for the Raw Women's Championship. This was the match that I think we expected at SummerSlam, that many of us hoped we were going to get at SummerSlam, and we didn't. And we got, of course, we know the 26 seconds, the rock bottom, i.e. the manhandle slam, boom, 1, 2, 3, we're trying to turn Becky heel again at SummerSlam. Becky should just skip SummerSlam from now on. Then we'll never have to deal with a weird heel turn again. We should just have Becky Lynch barred from every SummerSlam again. That would be my vote. But this match was, it was really good. It was really good. Was it a showstopper? Was it the main event? Was it the headliner, to pull all three names from Shawn Michaels? No, but it was damn good. It was damn good. And I think that if they have additional matches, and it seems like they may and probably will, that they can only get better. They can only get better. I still think the chemistry between Bianca and Sasha is a little bit better than Becky and Bianca, but that may come with time, that these two need a little bit of time to warm up with one another, understand each other's styles, add some new wrinkles to their matches. Hell, this is really their first true main event together. Well, their first real Raw one-on-one championship match. And I'm looking forward to seeing more, but this was exactly what you thought it would be. It was a finish that protected Bianca, and it was a finish that also allowed Becky to retain the championship. So check that box, and you get a finish that ends up being the exposed turnbuckle, and then not only the exposed turnbuckle, but also the pull of the tights to get the 1, 2, 3. And Becky retains the championship. Bianca is not hurt in the loss. Becky can say that she's just using everything at her disposal, and that's exactly right. And Bianca doesn't get hurt in the loss because she just somehow was duped into this, and Lady Luck was not on her side. That said, can we get a refresher training for pro wrestling, especially WWE referees? I understand that there's always the occasional behind the referee's back, someone say, for instance, a tag team match is going on. The heels have the one heel has the referee distracted while the other legal heel in the match pulls out like brass knucks and hits them, you know, and that is very, very typical. The purposeful distraction. But when nothing else is distracting the referee and the referee just blatantly misses the pulling of tights, the exposed turnbuckle, it's right in front of his face or her face. I'm not complaining about it. It's not a negative for me, but sometimes the referee's ignorance is just too blatant to fall in line with and go along with, because it's right there. It's right in front of your face. How does the referee not see this? So, I'd love to know the qualifications to be a referee. I mean, there must be levels of ignorance that you must meet to become a referee. There has to be, you know. I mean, maybe the IQ has to be room temperature. Maybe that's the qualification. I don't mean to crap on referees, but sometimes it's just a little too much. That said, it was the right way to protect Becky, or to protect Bianca, and have Becky retain the championship. There's another match, I'm sure, on the way. They got also their roll-up quota in for the night. Not the only one, though. And so after all of that, you know, it's just the roll-ups that continue to roll on, as they say, and the kicks to the head don't matter. The infinite amount of kicks to people's heads don't finish matches, but by God, I can't roll out of somebody putting me on my back. I just can't do it. I don't know what to do. I mean, knockout shots, concussions to potential concussions when somebody kicks me in the head. Nah, I can brush those off. I can walk it off, but something about that roll-up, man, something about it, I just cannot get off my shoulders. Anyway, I think this was a very good match, and we'll have to see where things go. The only critique I would give Bianca, and it's nothing really in-ring ability-wise. She's an absolute beast in the ring. I mean, to the likes of we've never seen. Never. We've never seen this combination of power and athleticism from a woman. Yeah, China, she was certainly maybe stronger, but she wasn't nearly as athletic. We had Jacqueline. I would argue she wasn't as strong, but she was athletic. You know, we've had Jazz, strong, but not athletic. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody else. Alicia Fox, I'm joking. But in terms of African-American women. So I don't really think we've ever seen this combination. And she's great on the mic. She checks all three boxes, at least foundationally, to become a star. It's just they have got something really special on their hands with Bianca. But that said, the little critique I have with her is that she puts up with too much. Like, she's almost sometimes too laid back, and she absorbs too much before she finally pushes back. We've seen this a number of times throughout her career, her short career, at least on the main roster, where she gets slapped. I think it was Sasha who slapped her before WrestleMania. And instead of slapping her back, she just points at the WrestleMania sign as if that somehow makes it even. I remember that. I remember coming on this show before that match, and I think it might have been the SmackDown or two SmackDowns before WrestleMania, and Sasha had slapped her, and instead of retaliating, she just stands there and she's like, "Don't make me do it, girl. Don't make me do it." And she points to the WrestleMania sign as if, again, that's some type of retribution. But this, at the same time, this is somehow carried over in some degree to her character today, where somebody will push her or shove her physically and she doesn't retaliate immediately. She's just like, she just kind of stands there like, "Oh, okay, that's what you want to do. That's what you want to do." And then it happens again. And Becky did this two or three times in the match before Bianca retaliated. And you want to see her stand up for herself instead of getting shoved around. For it shouldn't take that long for her to defend herself, is what I'm saying. I understand it's a baby face. You don't want to make it seem like she's too aggressive, but she needs an edge to her. And she needs a little bit of a trigger instead of it being so, it takes so much for her to get snapped. And I don't think that is going to be a great trait moving forward. Again, it's a small thing. It won't ruin her if they don't change it, but it's just one small tweak. And if that's the only thing I have to say about Bianca, again, I'm not the ultimate authority. I'm not the last and sitting on high, right? I'm not on the altar of knowledge, but I do think that watching wrestling for so long, as many of you have, that you can see a tweak that is so easily done that would help a character. And in Bianca's case, this is so easily done, where I'm not saying she has to have a hairpin trigger where she just, any wrong look, anybody breathes or sneezes near her, she needs to flip out. But what I'm saying is, when she gets slapped or pushed and you just stand there and take it maybe a couple of times before you decide to do something, come on, it's easily fixable. But that said, that's really the only thing that I have to say about Bianca in terms of things that need to just change. Just, it's very simple to do. So again, moving on here to, well, let's turn the page. We've been so positive for so long here, it's starting to make my stomach churn. We need to balance this out. And we need to talk about Survivor Series. And you may be asking yourself, what do you mean Survivor Series? What's a Survivor Series? Well, it used to be this pay-per-view that WWE would put on every so often. I believe it was every November. And, you know, they'd build to it for weeks and they'd be talking about it. And eventually they'd get to the show and then they'd have their matches in a 5-on-5 elimination. And then we'd move on to the next pay-per-view. But I have no idea why WWE is hiding this pay-per-view as if it's not on their schedule. No one has said a word about it. Nothing. I don't even think the announcers have said anything about it. Join us on our next pay-per-view event, Survivor Series. I've heard nothing. Is there something going on that I'm missing? Did they modify the date? Are they just not having Survivor Series? No one has said anything about it. And guys, look, let me pull up my calendar here. I believe there are only two Monday Night Raws left. Yes, two Monday Night Raws left until Survivor Series. So they've got two shows left to build for a pay-per-view that was one of their big four. It used to be. And now it's this forgotten child. Did somebody drop the ball here? Or are they just running from the fact that they can't build a pay-per-view around a manufactured rivalry between brands that really doesn't exist and no one cares about except for WWE itself? And they rather go with the storylines at hand. Well, if that's the case, what the hell are we trying to run from Survivor Series and make it a farce, make it a forced manufactured rivalry when you have built-in storylines that are going well? Imagine that. So is everybody going to suddenly have to drop what they're doing and be teammates at Survivor Series? Is that what the case is? Is everybody suddenly going to have to go, oh, well, you're wearing my color, so I know we were just, you know, slamming each other with chairs and talking trash in the ring, but I guess we're partners now. Is that the idea? I mean, is everybody doing a great job, like Bianca and Becky? Are they suddenly going to have to hold hands in a tag team? Maybe give each other, you know, a little pat on the back and a big embrace? And is that what's going to have to happen? I mean, because I've never in all my years of watching wrestling, and again, I don't mean to say that I'm the elder statesman here. I've been watching since 97. Many of you have been watching way before that. But I've never seen WWE not talk about a pay-per-view the next night after a pay-per-view concludes. You build to the next one. It continues. But now we are 2 weeks removed from Hell in a Cell. We've got 2 weeks of TV left until the next pay-per-view event of Survivor Series, one of your big four, by the way. And they have not said anything about it, built towards it, no matches announced. What the hell's going on? I really don't know, guys. I really have no idea. Maybe you guys have some theories. Maybe they changed the date and I'm not aware. But let me know what you think. Maybe you can clear my confusion and frustration about this in the mailbag. Email us, and I'm sure Mr. Casual Wrestling Fan would love to talk about it as well. So let's continue on, and let's talk about RK-Bro. Let's go back to some positive stuff. RK-Bro's music, I love it. I love it. It's a great mix of the two personalities, the two theme songs, and it also tells you now that they have theme music, which always lags behind. Theme music always lags behind the actual events on TV. It happened with Bayley. It happened with Sasha when she turned heel. We're getting it with RK-Bro. There's other examples, I'm sure. Seth Rollins. But now that they've got it, it's really good. And it also tells you from WWE's perspective that they're not done with this group by a long shot. They invested all this time. They've got theme music that they can now monetize, download it on iTunes, and really anywhere I'm sure you can get music, which I'll be doing after the show, I'm sure. It's really nice. I love that new music. It's got a nice mix of the two. If you haven't heard it, I'm sure you can YouTube it, or I don't know if it's available on YouTube. Well, maybe YouTube, but also on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your music. It might be available already. So that was a nice little touch of their music, and the Street Profits were even dancing along to it, and rightfully so. It's catchy. It's good stuff. So they were on commentary while the match between the Street Profits and the Dirty Dogs, which were Big Bob, I think is how he's now referred to as, or really just Robert Roode and Dolph Ziggler. And this match ended after a distraction from Omos. And the finish came after Omos's music hit and distracted the Street Profits. After the match, Omos attacked Riddle, who was ringside on commentary with Randy Orton. And the Dirty Dogs end up winning this match. But we got Omos coming out. AJ Styles-less, by the way. I don't know where AJ is. Hopefully they've just quietly split. That'd be cool. Because I'm ready for AJ to go on a run. However, the point here that I took most from this was Riddle attacking Omos and then having Randy Orton stand by somewhat idly. And the worst part about this wasn't even that, or that maybe this could lead to a split and why didn't you help out your partner? But Randy could say, hey, Riddle, I told you not to go over there. What are you doing? And he did. So I don't think it's a sign of a split that, hey, you didn't help me. Where the hell were you? But the weirdest part about this wasn't even anything that the stars did. It was something that production and TV did, which was after Riddle got dismantled by Omos, we had Randy about ready to lose his mind. And he's saying he's going to go after Omos. And the announcers even said that. What do the announcers, what does TV do? The second that Randy takes off his cutoff sleeve sweatshirt and look like he's going to go after Omos, what do? They go to a video package immediately to talk about what happened to T-Bar last week. Now, I just put over T-Bar and all that, but you got to remember, we're talking about Randy Orton and Omos, a match that people do want to see. People are invested in this. The crowd was into it. And it's like they almost ran out of time and they're like, all right, this segment's going too long. We got to cut it. We got to cut it and move on. That's exactly what this was. Because I'm like, wait a minute. We're about ready to see Randy go, you know, and attack Omos. What are we doing? To go to a video package for T-Bar? It was just so terrible of a transition. And I just made no sense. I'm like, wait. So what happened? Everyone just stopped talking about it. It was the weirdest thing ever. But I do think we'll eventually see Omos and Randy Orton one-on-one. No doubt. I think it will happen. And finally, we'll get to see if Omos no-sells the RKO. And he Bray Wyatt's the finish where nothing hurts him. We'll see. But as far as the Dirty Dogs getting the victory, it puts them in line for the tag team championship, which makes sense. Usually you don't want babyface, heel, babyface dynamic is always better. And that's fine. That's fine. I think, and the Street Profits have been tag team champions for quite some, they were quite, for quite some time, tag team champions. It's fine. I think that that's the right move. Do I think the Dirty Dogs are going to win? No, zero chance. Zero. Some other things that didn't make the cut on Hulu. Finn Balor defeats Chad Gable via pinfall, reading this on CBS Sports, after countering a superplex by Gable into a small package. Because, of course, God. All right. Before the match, Gable ran into Big E backstage and ran down the WWE champion for never coming to him to be turned into a better wrestler. All right. Well, I've got nothing to say about this. I mean, as far as Gable going into Big E and making that claim, I guess it's just to get a rub on Gable to continue to be relevant. I would like to see Gable and Otis continue along, move along in their progress. They were making progress and then they just suddenly were forgotten. And I'm really sad about that because Otis showed some promise. He really did. All right. Let's see. Carmella and Zelina defeat Nikki A.S.H. and Rhea Ripley when Vega pinned Nikki. And this match was interesting. It really was set up backstage where we had Carmella and Zelina, who has suddenly adopted a British accent. I mean, she kind of fades in and out of a British accent. I guess that just is infused to you. But like when the crown hits your head, you're just immediately blessed with the British accent. You just know how to do it. And I guess it's hilarious and also kind of cringy, but I love Zelina so much that I'm going to let it pass that she suddenly talks in a British accent when she wants to be snobby. And Carmella is at this point unwatchable. I know Corey Graves would love to hit me with a steel chair for saying that. I mean, that's his fiance. We all know that, but she's really unwatchable at this point. She lost whatever momentum she had on SmackDown when she came back with Reginald and her being the snobby wine drinking princess that she thought she was or whatever. And, now she's just this unwatchable, I'm beautiful, and kind of she feels very Bella-like, very Bella, very superficial, not much to my character. I'm just all about my looks. That's it. And it's really sad because I've seen Carmella show much more, and she's been relegated to just this stereotypical blonde that is all about her looks, and it's kind of a shame. But she's right now unwatchable. That said, we did get this match because Nikki and Rhea overheard Zelina and Carmella trash talking them as they were walking away. And they had a quick interaction and then they walked away. And that's how the match was propagated. But what made it really also unwatchable is Nikki, who I'm so glad I have not had to deal with, as Hulu has smartly, or WWE has smartly, kept Nikki A.S.H. out of the conversation or out of the cut for Hulu. That's a good thing. It feels like just I have been blessed with a gift of not having to deal with seeing her on a weekly basis. And then when I saw her and saw her speak again, it reminded me, doubled down on why I do not have any interest in this Nikki character. I know some people love it. They love the positivity. Oh, I think it's great. It's just, you know, it's such a refreshing character. It's just so positive. I don't give a damn. Right. Like people, I don't know who this audience is for. Are they streaming Monday Night Raw to a local preschool. I mean, I don't know exactly who they think that this is reverberating with or relating to. No idea. Apparently, the age group is not anywhere near me, because Nikki, well, this is kind of funny. I mean, she kind of owned herself here, not intentionally, but she said to Zelina, who made fun of her mask, I think it was Zelina, that I made this mask, and this mask is a message and represents everybody, a message to everybody that you can be whatever you want to be. And I'm thinking to myself, right, because nothing says being yourself like putting on a mask to hide yourself from people, right? I mean, if you're all about showing your true self and showing who you really are, get rid of the proverbial mask. Well, Nikki is indeed sending us the exact opposite message by hiding your face, hiding who you are. So she kind of owned herself in a hilarious way there. But I mean, she's just absolutely unwatchable. I cannot. Somebody needs to just bludgeon her. I want actually someone to just take a steel chair to her head, bust her open. If there was a safe way, of course. I'm not advocating for somebody to seriously get hurt, but if there was a safe storyline way to do this, I would love it. I would love to see it. That would force a character transformation. You could no longer come out and just be the beacon of positivity. You'd have to change. That's what I'd love to see. Someone just absolutely come out and wail her right in the skull with a chair, have her bleed, and then force a character change. Again, I know it's not possible, but if there was some way in an alternate universe to have this safely happen, I would sign up tomorrow. Okay, so here comes something else, guys. I'm going to talk first about Big E, and then I'll talk second about Kevin Owens, because I think Kevin Owens had one of his biggest nights in quite a while. And let me just say this about Big E. You guys have heard all my criticisms. You've heard my problem with the big ending. Again, I could not come up with a worse finish. Maybe the finger poke of doom is the worst. Like if somebody made a finger poke their finish, that probably is worse. But there's not much else that is worse than that. I mean, the big ending is just terrible. But I've gone over that. I've gone over his silliness, his gyrations, his eye popping, his inside jokes. I've gone over the fact that he can't get over the New Day. He still does the New Day clap during his matches. All that aside, which is all bad in and of itself, the worst part about all this run right now the WWE is having with Big E. Big E is like he's the least inspiring and energetic guy right now holding that championship. The elation came one night when he won the championship with the Money in the Bank briefcase, but he's since that time just kind of really been on a downward trend. Of at least in terms of inspiration, in terms of excitement, keeping the momentum going, keeping fans excited. It's just been kind of ho-hum. It's like, eh. Big E as champion is eh. And I loved Seth Rollins' interaction with Big E on Raw, where he called out Xavier and you just go back to your boys and keep cracking jokes. And Kofi Mania was a joke. I'm sitting there like, Seth, I love you, man. Like, exactly. I mean, he just trashed Xavier and the whole Kofi Mania thing. And Big E actually had the audacity to say that Kofi Mania was one of the biggest moments in WWE history. Yeah, Big E, I'm fairly sure that that's not accurate in anybody's world other than maybe you and Kofi and Xavier's world. And you're just blind sheep that follow everything you say and somehow follow you from arena to arena and cheer for anything New Day, which is just still mind-boggling to me. But outside of that, yeah, I'm fairly sure there is no argument to be made there. Why? Let me just rattle off a few, right? Let's see. Undertaker in his 21-0 streak, losing at WrestleMania 30, breaking the streak. Stone Cold versus The Rock, 3 times at WrestleMania. Daniel Bryan winning at WrestleMania 30 in one of the best examples of a grassroots movement for a superstar in history. That, by the way, Kofi Kingston would not have happened if WWE fans didn't understand the power they had with Daniel Bryan. So it was kind of a offshoot of the Daniel Bryan story. Let's see, The Rock versus Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 18. Or maybe Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart in an Iron Man match. Just to name a few. Just to name a few. But you want to tell me Kofi Mania is one of the greatest moments in WWE history? On what planet? Beyond the one that you live on that apparently is supposed to be the one that we should be on. Where are you pulling this from? And the thing is, I would normally let this go and just maybe talk about it in passing because it's part of the script. I actually believe that he believes that. I do. I 100% believe that he believes that. And it's not just a line or two that he was supposed to say, which is why I'm diving into this. So I'm sorry. I can't get on board with Kofi Mania being a moment that we're supposed to believe is one of the best of all time in WWE. Kofi Mania was a joke. It was an embarrassment to the WWE Championship. And again, it's not because of the tenure or respect I have for Kofi as a performer, but his character completely just undermined the WWE Championship. The constant joking, not being able to take anything seriously until he ran into a brick wall. Until he ran into reality by the name of Brock Lesnar, which was one of the best things I've ever seen, destroying Kofi in like 8 seconds, whatever it was. That was awesome. That I think was just, it was brilliant. I know people out there completely disagree with me and they're on a total opposite end of the extreme here. But Kofi Mania, come on, dude. That's laughable. That is laughable that is apparently one of the best stories WWE's ever told or one of the best moments. Get a grip, E. Get a freaking grip. I mean, even the crowd, they weren't overwhelmingly in support of this. I don't know. I was just laughing and also kind of frustrated that somebody would actually believe that. It's stupid. Anyway, Seth Rollins carved him up good. And Big E, look, he is super uninspiring. He doesn't have a whole lot of momentum going behind him. And I don't mean by wins. See, that's the thing. Big E has wins behind him. Clean victories. Clean. And he just beat Drew McIntyre at the last pay-per-view. Clean. So they're clearly trying to get him over. But to do that, you got to have more than just victories. You got to have great promos. You got to be able to get the crowd excited and get behind you. And he doesn't have that right now. He's just Big E with his super uninspiring music, by the way. His music is, if you want to go big, then say that. Okay. And it's just this kind of generic music behind it. It's just, there's nothing inspiring about Big E. And look, if you enjoy this, wonderful. If you enjoy Big E and you find it inspiring, then that's great. Seriously, I mean that sincerely. It's not for me. I think it's just, I don't think it's as bad as Kofi Mania. Kofi Mania was another level to me of just embarrassment to the championship. Big E's not an embarrassment to the championship. However, he's not adding to it. And it feels like the belt is trying to make him rather than him trying to make the belt. And you guys know how I feel about that. Nonetheless, Seth Rollins in this segment, though, did say that he had a championship match. Excuse me. Big E offered to do it tonight to get the crowd on his side, which is the only reason they were cheering so hard. It had nothing to do with really the Big E character. So if somebody's going to say to me, well, listen to the crowd, the reaction to Big E when he said that. Well, yeah. Wouldn't you cheer for that? It could be anybody with that belt. It could be a heel saying they want that championship match tonight and the crowd's going to cheer. Why? Because if you're in attendance, you want to see that big match because it'll make it feel like you got the price of admission. You got your money's worth. Of course, you want to be in person for a championship match. Nonetheless, the biggest championship that WWE has. So, of course, they're going to cheer for that. I could have gone in as a no-name and said that, and I would have gotten cheered. It had nothing to do with the Big E himself. It had everything to do with the circumstances created by what he wanted, selfishly by the fans wanting that for themselves. That's all it had to do with. So I don't want anybody giving me that argument. That's out the window. you know, that said, Seth said, no, I don't want it tonight. You know, I'm not 100%. He said he's going to do it on his time. I thought for once we'd get a mention of Survivor Series here. We got Jack, got nothing, you know, in normal times and, you know, in standard time, we would get the mention of Survivor Series here where Seth says, I'll be, you know, 100% in 2 weeks or in however many days, it's a little over 2 weeks. I want my match then. And that's it. I was actually hoping Seth would be able to give us the details of the contract. He was about to, and then Big E came out because I wanted to know, well, what kind of match? Who gets to pick the stipulation if that's in the contract? How long is this contract valid? You know, that kind of stuff. And Big E, as a babyface, interrupted something that I think the fans wanted to hear, like what's in this contract? And Big E interrupted. So that kind of annoyed the fans right off the bat. I wanted to know. But Seth Rollins, look, I am absolutely, I'm so high on Seth right now. He has found his groove, man. He has just found whatever this version of Seth is. As I mentioned, it's a hybrid of everything that he's ever created. And he's taking the best of every iteration of himself and he's just morphed it into this. It's great. I love it. I love the outfits. I love the sniveling. The laughing is annoying, not as annoying as Sasha's, but it's not channel changing annoying. It's just good stuff. Seth is on fire right now. And then, of course, we get Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens, who I think also had a very interesting night. Probably the most relevant night he's had, what, since WrestleMania? And Kevin even alluded to that it's been a while. Yeah, it has, Kev. But the most interesting part of this, as he comes out, is that he talks about how I don't care if I'm here for 3 months or 3 years. Now, what did I tell you guys? That I saw that Kevin Owens' contract expired in January. Now, 3 months from now is what? Early February? So end of January is when his contract expires, and Kevin was clearly speaking to shows like this one and everybody else online that was picking up on the fact that he only has 3 months left, now less, and he will be gone from the company. That was a clear wink and a nod to everybody that was talking about this. I can't wait till he leaves. I've said this before. He will be an excellent fit in AEW. If indeed that's where he goes, or maybe there's still a chance that he ends up signing last minute with WWE. We can't throw that out the window, guys. I want to, and we're already getting ahead of ourselves talking about how great it's going to be when he gets into AEW, all the matchups, all the great combinations, and being able to have the freedom to do what he wants and all that. But we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. Maybe they offer him a dollar amount that he can't refuse, or Kevin's just saying, screw this, I don't care about the money, I'm out. And I think that's probably where he's at. That seems to be the kind of guy that he is, where he's just like, I don't need the money, I just need my sanity. I need my creative freedom. I want to love wrestling again. I want out. That's my guess as to what he's thinking internally and probably saying to close friends. So we'll have to see where Kevin Owens lands. I'll be very interested to see where he lands. And again, they always have that 90-day no-compete clause. So even if he doesn't re-up with WWE, 90 days is usually what is the no-compete clause on WWE's contracts. And that means that he can't show up in any promotion for 90 days, 3 months after he leaves WWE. So that puts you at, late April? If you're doing end of January, say his contract expires January 30th, perhaps April 30th is the earliest we could see him in AEW, maybe early May. I know this seems like a long time, but just be patient, guys. Be patient. I'm interested to see how this whole thing goes and plays out. But it's very, very interesting to me. I never thought he would even entertain that line of the fact that people know he's out in 3 months. So, all right. Then, of course, Kevin Owens challenged Big E. He didn't ask him to put the title on the line, which was interesting, but as a babyface, you don't think you're entitled to one, so that made sense. But Big E versus Kevin Owens was the main event of the show. And it ended with a crucifix pin, i.e. a roll-up. I don't care what kind of what kind of label you slap on it, schoolboy, inside cradle, crucifix, man. It was a roll-up. Anyway, we did get Big E beating Kevin Owens here as expected. And here's the description from CBS Sports. After a hard-hitting match, Seth Rollins left commentary to hit Big E with a cheap shot. Owens tried to score the pin, but Big E countered with a crucifix pin to get the win. Owens challenged Rollins to a match for next week while trying to apologize to Big E for what happened. Owens apologized several more times, but Big E hit him with a big ending as the show went off the air. And here's the take that CBS Sports had on it. They gave this segment or this match a B+. They said this: on a night where WWE stuck to a very simple and effective strategy of keeping the focus on strong in-ring matches, the champion stepped up and delivered. Lynch getting a cheap win was the only option. A clean win buries Belair, and Belair couldn't win the title. Big E's title reign is still struggling to get off the ground a bit, but Rollins could help with the story, help with the kind of story he needs to really build things up. On Monday night, he and Owens put on the kind of bruising match that was nothing if not entertaining. Well, I will say this. I thought the match was fine. I wouldn't give this a B+. How can you give it a B+ when it ends with your babyface champion who's getting lukewarm reactions, slamming down and hitting his finish on another a babyface opponent that was legitimately trying to apologize, by the way, for something I don't know. Why exactly was he apologizing again? I'll get to that. And then getting no reaction to that and having the Raw go off the air. I mean, is that really how you want to build your champion? That is, as CBS Sports put it nicely, trying to still get off the ground? I mean, that's the opposite effect you want. I mean, what do you expect? I was actually hoping for a stunner, I'll be honest. I was hoping that Kevin Owens would stun Big E. That, to me, would have been more interesting and entertaining. Plus, the stunner is just a fun move to watch. And exactly why was Kevin Owens apologizing? I'm still trying to understand this. I watched it, and I'm reading it. Why was Owens apologizing? What was he apologizing for? For what? What exactly is Kevin Owens apologizing for? I mean, again, maybe I'm just so tired that I can't think of simple things right now. But somebody out there, please. What the hell is Kevin Owens apologizing for? That Seth Rollins interfered? Well, Seth Rollins isn't aligned with him. He flat out turned down Seth Rollins backstage. Rollins tried to proposition him with a deal. Owens said F you. So what does he have to apologize for again? Remind me. So hopefully next week, not only does I'm looking forward to Seth Rollins versus Kevin Owens, but also maybe a stunner to Big E. That'd be nice. I'd love to see that because there's a receipt coming for Big E, and hopefully it's in the version and in the form of a stunner. That would be fun. So just a flat ending to Raw, at least in terms of crowd reaction. It built nicely, and at least we know the main event of next week's show, presumably the main event. That's nice that we actually have we get this match next week, which in WWE's current culture is considered long-term booking. That's good, but it was a flat way to continue to try to build momentum for your champion. You did nothing for him. The crowd reaction was just like, huh? Yeah, not good. Not good. Okay. Austin Theory defeats Rey Mysterio via disqualification after Dominic slapped Theory. The slap set up Mysterio in position to win, but was caught by the referee who called the match off. Okay, so I guess they're still continuing with the Dominic and Rey story, of which nobody cares about anymore. I mean, this was not on Hulu, which is why I'm reading the description as well. I care more about Austin Theory and what he's doing than I do Rey Mysterio and Dominic. I mean, they are the most, they're not going anywhere. It's like they can't pick a direction. Are you going this way or are you not? Are you taking the road of Dominic versus Rey, or are you just creating drama that's really not going to end up anywhere? It's just the typical father-son miscommunications and fights that'll eventually resolve themselves. And, oh, now we're happy and, we're going to have a nice big hug backstage. Is that the road we're going? I don't know, but it's starting to, I think, wear on people. They're just apathetic towards it now. All right. So I believe, did I cover everything? Did I cover everything, guys? I think I did. So with that being said, I hope you guys enjoyed the show. I know I did. This was a fun show, and I will be back tomorrow, but so will the Casual Wrestling Fan and Mrs. Casual Wrestling Fan with your mailbag. So do not forget to send in your emails to realwwepodcast@gmail.com. All of the emails in the Patreon messages, Instagram messages, Twitter, if you want to DM me there at @wrestling_audio, those will all be going to the Casual Wrestling Fan for him and his wife to respond to. Cannot wait for that. And of course, the voicemails I'm still going to be doing voicemails. So please send them to me at 518-952-0247. I will be doing those as well. So don't forget about me, guys, my own show. So the other thing is, and this is the last thing I'll mention, and then I'm going to sign off and I'll get out of your hair here, is I've toyed with the idea of going live on YouTube. Now, I only have 300 subscribers on YouTube, and I'm not embarrassed by that. The reason I'm not is because we don't do video on YouTube. I think I have like 2 videos or 3 videos up on YouTube I dabbled with a number of months ago. One of them actually has like 10,000 or nearly 20,000 views somehow. It's about Lars Sullivan. So somehow that one took off. I don't know. I can't figure that out. But we only have 300 subscribers because we're audio only. You don't go to YouTube for audio. So it's actually kind of amazing that we only have 300 or that we do have 300 subscribers on YouTube for just having 99% audio. There's no video to speak of that's at least in mass by any means. So I thought about going a little bit more live on YouTube. I don't know what your guys' thoughts are on that. I can now do it on my phone. Before I wasn't qualified because I didn't have enough subscribers to do a live stream on my phone, but I can do that now. I don't have to have my laptop with me or whatever. So let me know what you guys think about that, because I'd love to do a live video feed on YouTube. And with all 300 subscribers, I know it's really a number that's mind-bogglingly large. I'm just being facetious about it. But really, I thought about it, and I think it'd be fun to do. And let me know what you guys think about that. That's something I haven't dabbled in too much as video. And I'd like to. I really would like to. I think it'd be a different element to this show beyond the audio. So, all right, everybody, thank you so much for joining me here tonight on the Monday Night Raw review. Send in those emails for tomorrow, and then I will be doing your voicemails. So thank you so much, guys. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts if you have a minute, and go ad-free on Patreon or on Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. I'll talk to you next time.